Hello and welcome to Grow Global. I'm your host, Patricia Demetrio. This is podcast number 6. We are going to be speaking about hybrid learning. Grow Global is sponsored by Platinum Credit Group. They help individuals and organizations with financial education to help them with startup loans and or working capital. They provide in-depth credit, income, and financial background reviews before submitting applications to lenders on business owners' behalf. We are truly grateful to Platinum Credit Group for helping to fund this podcast, which in part helps to make this show possible. Our guest today is Mr. Lee Allen. Mr. Allen got his Master's of Education from Georgia College and State University. He has been teaching mathematics and SAT skills since 2010. He is Teacher of the Year in Georgia's largest school district. Hello and welcome to our podcast today, Grow Global. I'm speaking today with Mr. Lee Allen. Before we get started, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm an alternate background type teacher. I started my career in IT world. I was a project manager, and while I was in college, I had tutored for SAT prep for someone, and also as part of something I just did on the side, I was a community coach for a local high school for the wrestling team, just because I missed the sport and being involved. I was good at my job. I'm a project manager of the year. I made good money. I worked from home, all the things that, you know, people like, but for whatever reason, I just felt like something was missing. The switch over to teaching 9 years ago, when I switched, I made half as much. I worked twice as hard, but I'm infinitely more happy. So I had to go through an alternate background. I wanted to get an MAT where I could get certified through that and get my master's degree at the same time. However, the state of Georgia, they didn't make that avenue easy. So I have 2 bachelor's degrees from UGA, and I have a business degree and a sport management degree. I've been teaching math, and I had good SAT math scores. I had already passed the GACE for certification, but they wouldn't let me get certified through an MAT without getting a bachelor's in math. So I had to go through and paid $6,500 out of pocket just to get certified. Wow. In order to get a teaching license. Went through that program. I was named as a Georgia TAP ambassador through that. I was recently named the Gwinnett County Teacher of the Year last year.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's awesome. And math is such a hard subject for a lot of kids. We have a tutoring program, and that's one of the subjects that most often children have to have tutoring.
The funny thing is that math wasn't even my favorite subject in school. I really liked history, but the world needs people who are good at math, can teach math right now. So that's what I wanted to do, was kind of go help in that way.
Yeah, great. So we're going to go ahead and get started. So since the beginning of COVID, we have seen an exponential increase in hybrid and online learning. Do you think that this has been beneficial for the education and learning of children in our nation today?
I personally don't think that it's been beneficial for every child. I think there's some that learning mode can have benefits for. I definitely think that overall, it's not a net benefit at all. I think that we're seeing a lot of kids miss out on kind of a lot of the soft learning and skills that are developed outside of the curriculum. That's, to me, the biggest thing. Just the younger grades being around, playing outside, being around their peers, and that even the older grades. I teach high school, but you see a lot of, when they're isolated at home, they're missing out on things like following directions or getting in routines. I think the others is what we saw, and this initially happened when COVID first hit and everyone across the country went digital. You saw that working remotely, initially kids were very motivated and could get it done, but we kind of saw a habit form where the adolescent brain hasn't matured yet, and a lot of kids need structure and routines. Sometimes someone standing there just to remind them, hey, what are you supposed to be doing? So that's another thing. And then the biggest one to me is good teaching involves collaboration. And when you're working remotely, most of the work is independent. And it's really hard to work collaboratively in a way that's where you're isolated or online. And so kids are missing out on that collaboration, because that's a skill that is getting built and it can really enrich learning.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. And what we do is we teach life skills, thinking about those soft skills, right? And if you don't have a home life where you're working with other kids, or your parents aren't structuring your day, I mean, there's a lot of things that could be missed in that online learning component. Yeah, that's definitely something that I think we'll see the effects of perhaps later. I don't know that it's going to be as in our face now, but I think if it continues long-term, definitely we'll see. So we know the pandemic has also led to an increase in mental health problems, right? So we've heard of students experiencing more anxiety and depression. However, many people at times are not including mental health of the teacher as a part of that equation. So is there anything that we can do to prevent mental health problems on our teachers?
Definitely. It's a big societal shift that I think will have to take place. I think first and foremost is there's got to be a shift in accountability, because right now with all these negatives that are happening and learning from COVID, we had a lot of negative trends. COVID made them worse. A lot of times it flows downhill and kind of gets put on the teacher's responsibility. Why do you have this many kids failing? And this isn't everywhere, but in a lot of places, the accountability for learning isn't really on parents or on students. It's shouldered mostly on teachers, and that's a big burden for teachers, and there's only so much we can do. And then especially when you pile in and you have in an academic class 35, 36, 37 kids, and you have a bunch of them that have a lot greater needs than before, and then it's all coming down on you, and then it just becomes this giant snowball or a domino effect where the teachers are becoming burnout very quickly. It's affecting teachers in Title I schools more, which is unfortunate because a lot of times those students have greater needs, and it just becomes, it exacerbates the disparity that exists there. What can we do to prevent the mental health? I like to say there should be a model where if you envision a circle, we have teachers, administrators, and parents, and students at the center, where teachers, administrators, and parents all are working together with the students at the center of that focus. And that includes accountability for when students aren't doing anything. There's got to be shared accountability on people outside of the teachers. Having a good balance of work life, not expecting teachers to be working 60, 70 hours a week. There was an administrator that told me one time that he didn't know any good teachers that work 40 hours a week. They all work 70, 80 hours a week. I'm the county's teacher of the year and I work 45. So I guess it's implied that if you don't work that much, that you're not a good teacher. And that just kind of adds to that burden. And that's not the case. So for teachers just to understand that you need to have a healthy work-life balance and take care of yourself and get done what you can get done and prioritize things and become efficient. And if it doesn't get done, it doesn't get done.
Right. Yeah. Because it's like, how good of a teacher can you be if you're burnt out and
born from an empty cup? Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Have to make that balance. At the end of the day, I mean, it's about the kids, and the teachers are part of the equation, and they have to be able to do their jobs effectively. And I just wish sometimes we had like this mentality of what they do over in France. I think they have like a 4-day work week. They really prioritize family life and well-being as the most important thing. Maybe that will come here. So nowadays, a lot of people are talking about the benefits of working remotely, but the sad reality is that many times teachers, they have to deliver their online or their hybrid classes and go to a second job just to make ends meet. So is there anything that we can do to improve the lives of our teachers? If so, you know, what is our civic duty as citizens? What is your opinion around that?
There's a lot of things that can be done. Any college-educated professional that's a teacher shouldn't have to work two jobs just to make ends meet. A lot of us go into education like I did, knowing that you're not going to be obscenely wealthy or have a massive, lavish vacations, but we do it because we like helping people. Your teachers are generally a big part of your helpers of society. So that compensation shouldn't be taken advantage of just because we want to help people means we make less. Public education is investment in your society. You know, our country spends a lot of money on, for example, like the military, and that's seen as like an investment. The defense budget, it's huge. It's more than the 2nd through 11th countries in the world combined. But it's hard because with public education, even though there's research to back that the return on investment immense, it's one of the biggest things you could do long term. But when we have a politics cycle that, you know, every 4 years you have a new person at the top, and senators are, I think, every 6 years. So you have these kind of shorter term goals, and if you don't get an immediate tangible benefit or outcome, yeah, a lot of times it's harder for them to justify investing in it because they're not going to see that for their next election cycle. So starting from the top there, really truly seeing it and valuing it, but understanding you might not see a tangible benefit for many years. Honestly, it's a money problem. Like, the supply and demand, it's a very simple economic problem. And if you want to retain and recruit more people, if you pay them more, it's just a fact that that'll happen. Parents and guardians and caretakers getting more involved in their children's education, if they can sacrifice time to come into the building, if that is is allowed, and just kind of seeing and being present there, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, that's one of those things that the pay, I mean, you just have to increase because, you know, things have become more expensive. Everything's gone up. And I think the salaries need to go up as well. We spend so much money on our military, right? I mean, it seems like it's always like this. Year after year, it's the same huge budget on the military. We need to start paying a livable wage.
A lot of teachers sponsor these things for free and then work on them outside of their contract hours for free, and just to make that experience better for kids. We're struggling to find coaches right now because my season runs from October to February, and I coach mainly because I love the sport and I love giving back, and I believe I like seeing people improve and get better. But I work probably an extra 20 hours a week for 10 to 12 weeks, and then I do some summer work and I get paid a couple thousand, and that hasn't gone up at all, and that's across the board. And we're struggling to find coaches because it's hard to justify doing that and spending time away from your family, but the money's just not there. It's hard, and that's something that I think needs to change. It's important for kids to be involved, but the adults need to be fairly compensated for doing these things and making it special. And so many people do a great job. Like we had our homecoming dance this past weekend. The student council teachers that did that, I mean, they did a phenomenal job, and those kids had a great experience. Mm-hmm. But like they're doing it because they want to create that for people.
Yeah, we're so different here, and that's one of the things I love. That's the one thing that's so great, is how we have all these fun things around education, because it's not like this in other countries. Most countries that I've been to, I mean, our school system around the extra activities and dances and things that we do is so unique to American education. That I really love. We're just going to keep talking about it and hoping things will get better. Let's hope that they do. So looking at that and things that are going on and hoping that things do eventually get back to, I guess, some kind of normalcy. I mean, they already have. I mean, if you look at it, COVID is pretty much not a main topic anymore. How can we ensure that our teachers will have better working environment conditions? I know we talked a little bit about wages, but then there's this, also this issue around safety and issues around guns and just overall security. How do you think we can improve our education system in terms of security aspect of it? I mean, for me, it's scary when I send my daughter off to high school every day. Sometimes I wish she was back in homeschooling just for that reason alone. I mean, what are your thoughts around that?
I agree. It's scary and it's very unfortunate. And even this year, there's been an uptick in near me of students bringing guns to school. Thankfully, there hasn't been any school shootings, but there have been a lot of gun issues. I had a lot of teachers reach out to me and say, essentially, like, one of the biggest reasons they're not sure they want to continue working is we have all these things we've talked about, but then also they have to worry about if today's the day they're going to die and not return home to their families. And it's just a scary thing that crosses their mind, unfortunately. That schools are kind of a microcosm of our society at large, and so we're seeing a lot of societal issues, and those are being reflected in our schools. So to make it better, I mean, honestly, it's got to be a community effort. We have to bridge that gap between the community and the school systems, and that's such an uphill battle right now, because I just saw a study about how public trust is basically at an all-time low, and so bridging that gap is going to be tough, because those parents need to be having conversations with their kids. And a lot of times when students hit ninth grade, parents think, I'm done. Wipe my hands. They're yours now. They're in high school. I don't have to be a parent anymore. And that is not the case at all.
Yeah.
Almost even, and I'm biased because I'm a high school teacher, but it's almost more so than ever, because parents, they need to be checking their kids' belongings. The kids don't need to have guns. And how so many 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old kids are getting access to guns is mind-blowing. There's got to be more trust in the school system. The community has to be rebuilt there, where the schools can go to parents and say, hey, this is what we're seeing. Here's a plan. Help us out. Talk to your kid. Check their backpack. Talk to their friends. Make sure you know who they're around. Because I think if that happens right now, a lot of parents honestly just won't trust what the schools are saying, because they won't believe it. That's that mistrust in government system. How do we make it better? That's such an uphill battle, and it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I think community effort is a big one.
We can be strict, but like we've seen it, there's a lot of measures that have been taken and things have improved, but people still find a way around them. And so until we really attack the root of the problem and address why it's happening and be more preventative before they ever get to a school building. I think that kind of like holistic approach is long-term what needs to happen. It's going to be very, very tough, and it's going to be expensive because you need counselors and you need people who are trained to deal with kids who have these issues post-COVID. It's just hard to get the money for that right now.
Wow. It really is a scary thing. According to a consulting firm, McKinsey and Company, college enrollment has dropped by around 560,000 students in fall of 2020 compared to what it was in 2019. So what can we do to prevent these statistics from happening coming years? Do you think also that having an online hybrid education has to do with students perhaps dropping out of school?
Yeah, I definitely think that the online hybrid plays a part in it. I think that there's kind of a multitude of factors. There was some negative trends before COVID, and then COVID just took it and made it exponential. Like we talked about earlier, where we took a negative, to go math here, a negative linear trend into an exponential crisis. From kids I personally know and have taught and coached and mentored, a lot of kids struggled so much that first COVID year and even beyond that. But it was hard because that first year of college is a lot of times a growing experience, and it's a big stepping stone in life. And then when you're having to do that and be isolated and alone, that was really, really hard. There was several students and past athletes that I've talked with a lot, and they really struggled because they weren't really allowed to have study groups. Their classes were all online, so they didn't get to really sit with anyone. The dining halls were basically like to-go foods, like they couldn't even sit in the dining halls. So they were really just isolated, and if they moved from home, they were all alone. It made it really, really hard. What can we do to prevent it? I think another thing we're seeing is current generation. This is do you know when the first iPhone came out?
I want to say, was it like 2004?
I believe it was the June 2007. But then the iPad came out in 2010. I think what we're seeing in this current generation is in 2010, that was 12 years ago. So current 18-year-olds were 6 years old. And I'm a parent of young kids myself. I'm not a perfect parent. And there's times where my kid has a Kindle Fire tablet, and I try and put educational games on there and some other like learning appropriate games, but every now and then he downloads like a Bubble Pop game or you know, some other kid's game or even like a Disney Plus. And sometimes when I get overwhelmed, I just finished my specialist degree. My wife and I at the same time, we put an iPad in front of him to entertain him. He's 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're seeing this current generation, this is the first group of kids that they were raised on apps and immediate gratification. This is my personal experience, and just kind of not backed by research, I don't think, at least. A lot of these kids, their brains have been wired a little bit differently, and they're used to instant gratification through apps, through social media. If they don't see a immediate or near immediate payoff of something, we're seeing a lot more kids opt out of it. This isn't to say like kids have always been 100% interested in class and algebra one since the beginning of time. I know that's not the case, but what I'm seeing more of is, why am I doing this? What's the point? And then just not doing it. From COVID, we've struggled because we've had to adjust our expectations because of different situations. And so it's kind of been, the expectations have been lowered, and we're struggling to get those expectations higher in some schools. And kids are just kind of going off of that. They don't see the long-term benefit of learning because their brains are wired to this instant gratification. What you're doing outside of school in 5 or 10 years, I don't know what's going to be there. And our society is changing at a rapid rate.
Yeah. Wow. I never thought about that though. Yeah. We're coming into an age now with kids that have grown up on apps. Mm-hmm. And technology and instant gratification, like everything is instant. And so they're questioning, even my daughter, she talks about, well, why do I have to take algebra? I mean, there's some things I question myself. I don't know, why do they have to know, like there's this advanced level that students that are going to go to college, they need to know certain things. And then certain kids don't need to know that high level of math. Yeah. I get that. But I think there needs to be some more like different way of educating around why you need to know it. It has to be a part of the curriculum.
Absolutely. And right? I really try to incorporate it, because, and I'll be honest with them, and a lot of math teachers won't be. And if any math teachers are listening, I really encourage you, because I've had zero failure rate with this so far. Mm-hmm. But like when the kids are like, we're doing quadratic function, when am I ever going to use this? I'll look at them and say like, most of you probably never again. After this and Algebra 2 in college, outside of your math classrooms, you will probably never see this again. I do know that you're going to like see something and need to like figure it out. So like you're going to have steps. You're going to need to understand how like number relationships work. But like I'm honest with them, you probably will will never use the quadratic formula again in your life, but you'll need to know how to follow steps in a process.
Yeah.
Look at something similar, look at an answer, see if it makes sense. That's problem solving. And I really try and like harp on it and be big about it because that's why I teach math. I don't teach it to memorize formulas or memorize rules. I teach it to try and develop problem solving because I think that's what our society is going to benefit from the most, having good problem solvers.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of things come out of that, though, like with science, right? And kids that create like these, like the robots and that want to be like mechanical. What type of math would you need to know around, like when it comes to like engineering and creating bots and like, is there a certain math around that you teach?
It's a great question. I mean, you could look at as far as like, have some calculus in there. But I think one of the best things I've heard people describing engineers, friends that are engineers and people online, I've seen say this, most of them like probably couldn't tell you like exactly what to do, how to like solve a problem or whatever it is they're working on. But mm-hmm. they have this background knowledge that they can pull from and they can figure out an answer much quicker than anyone else.
Yeah, that's good. So I think explaining that and trying to understand that definitely needs to be more part of the curriculum. So much is in that. I agree. That's awesome. Okay, so do you have any message for teachers that are thinking about leaving the profession? Oh no, I'm sure there's a lot of people or teachers that, like my husband, he will never go back into the classroom. Yeah, as a history teacher, he just can't do it. What would you say?
I would say that honestly, if any teachers are listening to this, 8 to 9% of teachers leave the profession every year. A couple things. My message, first of all, would be to understand that you need to take care of yourself first. If your job and teaching is becoming so hard and mentally difficult that it's causing you health problems, whether it be physical or mental, you got to take care of yourself first. Whether that means taking a leave of absence or looking at kind of mental health services or setting aside time to go to the gym, you got to take care of yourself. And that includes having a healthy work-life balance. I think a lot of happiness in teaching right now depends on where you're at, because depending on where you're at can make a huge difference. And that includes the support from the parents and the community and the support from the administration and people above you at your school and higher up. But also know that if you're struggling, you're not alone. I think a lot of teachers that I've spoken with struggle because as teachers tie so much of our identity to being teachers. And when you make that decision to walk away or possibly walk away, it's a really hard thing because it feels like a part of you is dying and it's tough. I'm a huge advocate for the public education system in our country. And I think that it's something that is very important for all levels of society. Something that worries me is new teachers quit more than others by a huge amount. I think over 50% leave in the first 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Title I schools have a 50% higher turnover rate than non-Title I schools across the country, which is again just kind of exacerbating disparities that exist and kind of making situations worse. And then I think math and science are leaving at a 70% higher rate, what I read from the University of Massachusetts, a study they had about it. And so my worry is we have new teachers quitting, we have older teachers retiring early, we have mid-level people who are kind of stuck because they're not sure what to do and if they want to leave, and then we have a shrinking pipeline where enrollment in new teacher and teacher preparation programs in colleges is down 40%. Many universities, and where I'm at in Georgia, just they cut a bunch of college majors from the university system of Georgia, and the majority of them are education majors. It's because there's so many less students enrolling in those programs. I fear for the next 5 years if we continue that trend, because it's only going to get worse. So my message to the teachers thinking about quitting, take care of yourself first. But if you can find a way to stay involved, whether it be through substituting or staying involved in teaching and finding a better fit for you, do so, because our society is held up, I think, by the public education system, and I don't want to see it crumble and fall.
Yeah, we need more men. I hear there's a lot of African-American men, especially, that are going into teaching. It needs to an overhaul in our education system.
Definitely. And I think to that point is, unfortunately, a lot of times, especially if you're in a diverse school system, because there's so few Black male teachers, a lot of times they can just be labeled and said, well, they're going to be the authoritarian and we'll send all the bad kids to them. Then that just burns them out quicker. And especially if, like, I'm not an authoritarian. authoritarian type teacher at all. Because I'm a male, if they think that I'm just going to yell at kids and make them sit silently, like, that's not me. I didn't quit my job to like yell at teenagers. I think that's an unfortunate thing where you're right. There is a large disparity with Black teachers, but especially Black males. And part of their burnout is, I think this is just me anecdotally from people I know, is a lot of times they get extra work piled onto them in the sense of having kids who have more issues, and that just burns them out faster, and they also leave at a higher rate.
Yeah, it's a lot of issues, a lot of things going on. We'll just have to just keep, like I said before, talking about it and hoping that things will get better. But there are some good things coming. Is there anything special that you would like to talk about that you may be doing with your work as an educator?
Yes, I started a company, and I've partnered with a publishing company called CSE Pub. And CSE Pub currently works in universities, and they're trying to branch out in the K-12 space. But what I've partnered with and what I'm doing is I am creating an assessment tool where I do math a little bit differently. My wife and I, we both teach Algebra 1. We teach together. One thing that we've done that's different is when we were year long, we took a quiz every Wednesday and a test every 3 weeks, and we didn't do any units. Like normally in math, you know, you have chapter 1 or unit 1, whatever you want to call it. You take a quiz and a test, and then you have chapter 2, quiz, test, chapter 3, and it's just over that chapter 3 stuff. What we do is we take a quiz every Wednesday and have 10 questions, open note, and then a test every 3 weeks wherever we're at. All the quizzes and all the tests are cumulative. So a test and quiz in November is going to have stuff from August all the way through November, everything that they've seen. And we intelligently design the quizzes so that we call it a spiral design, where if they're struggling with a topic, they're going to, so it allows, it's been really great because people learn at different paces. And if you didn't learn it during like chapter 1 and then you never see it again, like you never really get a chance to practice it if it took you a little bit longer than someone.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So they get multiple chances to practice it throughout the year. We don't have to cram. We've had great success with our test scores, and it's not because we're teaching to the test. It's because I think we're building long-term knowledge in kids. Did with a publishing company is I've put this in an electronic format, and I'm working to now build where it could be automated for teachers, where it would create and generate these quizzes and tests for them based on student levels. And so this could be like a whole class where, like, if you had a support class that was a little bit lower than your honors class, they could have two totally different quizzes, and it doesn't take the teacher any time to prepare these or generate them because the program would do it based on the class levels. I'm trying to make it where it's automated for the teachers, so it takes work off their plate. It allows them to focus on teaching instead of assessment generation. It allows the students to learn at a different pace, and also at the same time, as they're getting better, the questions are getting harder, so they're understanding at a deeper pace as well. And we don't do chapters or units, so it's just like anything we've ever learned, but it's also focused on what the highest needs of the class are. So it's kind of an intelligent design based on needs, so they see it again, and depth of understanding, so it can get more difficult and they can get a deeper understanding. And it's very nice because the parents know when their quizzes are, they know when their tests are. We don't have to push them back if we didn't get to something. Organized for the kids, we give them a study guide before the test. It's practice. Another thing we've seen is it takes a lot of the test anxiety away from kids because they take the quizzes so often and they're low pressure. So we'll say it's test 1, quiz 1, test 1, quiz 2, test 1, quiz 3, and then we take test 1. If test 1 was higher than any of those quizzes, we use that test grade to replace those quizzes. And it's not any extra work on the teachers, because my wife and I had adopted a high school kid previously a few years back. So we learned a lot of these kind of high school tricks, and a lot of teachers do like test corrections. And we learned pretty quickly that test corrections very quickly it's a great thing in theory, but for probably 95% of the kids, those test corrections just get passed around through airdrop and whatnot. And the kids just end up copying other people's answers, correcting it. And it's not really learning. So we just try and emphasize, like, if you didn't do good on the quiz, just keep trying and your test can replace it. It becomes not a big deal, where they do try on the quizzes, but they're not so struck with fear that they get paralyzed because it just becomes routine. The company is called CSE Pub. I'm currently in the process of Algebra 1 almost built out. I'd like to move into middle school math and geometry be my next thing to branch out to.
We could go online and look at it.
So if you go to csepub.com, I think you'll see CSE Pub. You'll see kind of a lot of their, like, what they do for professors. They have a lot of online content built out.
Okay. Yeah.
For different universities, what they have. But as far as, I guess, looking at it, if anybody wants to contact me and talk about it, work out the kinks with me and see.
I'm so happy to hear you talk about this.
because I think it's a game changer.
Thank you. I really hope so.
Okay, Mr. Allen, well, I want to thank you so much for being with me today. All the best to you and your students and co-teaching with your wife. That is exciting to hear. So all the best to you, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I want to thank Mr. Allen for speaking with me today. Email us your questions and opinion at info@LifeSmartEducation with the subject line, I am an educator. Yes, you can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at LifeSmartEducation. Today's show was produced by Keith Richardson, edited and written by Christine and Manuel Lopez, no relation. Our social media producer is JD Johnson. Thanks to our friends from Platinum Credit Group and our friends at WCBE 90.5 FM for sponsoring this podcast and making it happen. I'm Patricia Demetrio. This is Grow Global. Thanks for listening.